Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. And we'll begin with the front page of the commercial news with a story entitled Solar Wind Energy Regulations on Tap by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. A new petition will be before the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission this week, after some additional proposed changes have been made to the Danville zoning ordinance pertaining to solar and wind energy regulations. The city has requested solar and wind energy systems be added to district use regulations in the zoning ordinance. After additional resident and commission discussion, after the city council sent the zoning petition back for further discussion, there were only a couple of small parts that changed, said Danville Planning and Urban Services Manager Chris Milliken. For the section on solar energy, there are more clarifications on setbacks from any residential district. There must be a buffer or separation of 100 feet, Milliken said, which can include a type of screening such as landscape or fences. A section also was added to address the quality of the solar panels and meeting state and federal requirements in recycling or disposing of them if abandoned and no longer used. Regarding wind energy systems, there is clarification to the height and how they're measured, Milliken said. Language was added to refine the definition of small systems to ensure size is capped and setback distance from residences also is outlined. At a recent city council meeting, commission members were appointed to serve on the newly reduced 7-member body. 6 returning commissioners are Tracy Taylor, Katasha Butler, Ted Vaccata Jr., Adam Brown, Dave Carlton, and Pete Goodwin. A new commissioner is Troy Savlik, who works at Watchfire Signs. The Zoning Commission also continues to talk about other possible zoning ordinance revisions and projects such as downtown uses and parking and agricultural zoning regulations. Our next story is entitled IEPA Agency Cites Energy Company by Jack Brighton. A former Vermilion County, Illinois coal plant, heavily criticized for contaminating groundwater, has received a violation notice for alleged contamination of the Middle Fork River. The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency cited Vistra Energy Corporation, formerly known as Dynegy Midwest Generation, for alleged violations of the Illinois Environmental Protection Act at the Vermilion Power Station near Oakwood, Illinois. The notice was sent to Vistra on June 20th, following an Illinois EPA stream survey of the Middle Fork River near 3 coal ash ponds in Vermilion County owned by Vistra. The survey found that rock-filled gabions meant to prevent riverbank erosion under the ash ponds had been damaged and found downstream or were completely missing. The Illinois EPA also found several seeps with heavily stained reddish-brown discoloration along the riverbank bordering the Vistra property. The violation notice says the seeps had discharged into the river, staining sediment and rocks, and that the discharge created offensive conditions in the Middle Fork. Dynegy merged with Vistra earlier this year. Vistra Energy did not reply to requests for comment. Sanjay Sofat, chief of the Illinois EPA Bureau of Water, says the seeps may violate state environmental laws. We have sent a violation notice to the company in June of 2018, alleging violations of the Clean Water Act and the Pollution Control Board regulations. And you may also know that there's a citizen suit filed in the federal court, and we'll be monitoring that very closely, Sofat said. Environment groups and Vermilion County officials have raised questions about ongoing contamination from the Vermilion coal ash ponds. A lawsuit against Vistra was filed in May by the Prairie Rivers Network, claiming toxic chemicals and heavy metals from coal ash are contaminating groundwater and entering the Middle Fork River through the seeps noted by the Illinois EPA. An earlier violation notice was issued in 2012 to Dynegy Midwest Generation for exceeding groundwater quality standards at monitoring wells near the coal ash impoundments. Water samples at some wells showed concentrations of boron of up to 20 times the allowed level of groundwater standards and excessive levels of manganese, sulfate, and iron, according to the 2012 Illinois EPA notice. Vistra is preparing a proposal to the Illinois EPA for permanent closure of its Vermilion coal ash ponds. They have to consider all possible remedies, Sofat said. Then they are supposed to tell us the actual remedy that they've selected. The remedy in final closure plan must comply with groundwater quality standards. And then also, we want to see how the fate and transport of contaminants for the selected option over time will behave, he said. So it's not just the one-time compliance that we want to see. We want to see that in perpetuity. Violations of surface water standards would also be a factor in the Illinois EPA decision on Vistra's closure proposal, Sofat said. There is a violation notice out there, and that is about the surface water violation. So that is also going to play a role. The Midwest Center for Investigative Reporting is a nonprofit online newsroom offering investigative and enterprise coverage of agribusiness, big ag, and related issues through data analysis, visualizations, in-depth reports, and interactive web tools. And our next story is entitled Farm to Fork. DACC plans dinner to benefit Land Lab by Carol Rome. Danville. Long tables carefully set with vintage dinnerware in the middle of the quad at Danville Area Community College, and a delicious meal prepared by culinary arts instructor Dana Wheeler await guests next month at a Farm to Fork dinner. The dinner on Saturday, August 25th, not only will showcase fresh produce and herbs, much of which is grown on the college's 5.5-acre sustainability farm on North Daisy Lane, but it also will serve as a fundraiser to continue the work being done at the farm. It's a fundraiser to supplement the funds we need for supplies, like seeds, or if we need to fix farm equipment, Wheeler said. The first year we had the farm, we had a grant. They still have more things they want to do with the farm, she said, adding that apple trees were planted there earlier this year. They're putting in a children's area and garden, a washing station, and a bee observation tower. Rebecca Doss, administrative assistant for the Executive Vice President's Office of Instruction and Student Services, said, "The bee observation tower is something that's been talked about and is in the works. We hope to have it in the near future." The property is being leased at no cost to DACC by owners Christy Hare Bartos and her husband Jerry Bartos. Hare Bartos, who serves on the DACC Foundation Board, offered the college the use of the property in 2015 as a learning site. Since then, DACC students in a variety of courses of study, as well as younger children and teens from District 118 schools and community programs, have reaped hands-on experience and knowledge from the sustainability farm and student learning land laboratory. The farm is used much more than just for culinary arts, Wheeler said. Pier Court brings kids to get in some of their service hours, and the horticulture and green programs at the college use it too. The college uses the donated land to grow a wide array of crops and native prairie plants, keep honeybees, and maintain bluebird nesting boxes. The vegetables, fruit, herbs, and honey produced at the farm are used by DACC's Culinary Arts Program, but also are shared with the community. We donate a lot of the produce to DACC students, take it to area food pantries, and community organizations like Community Action, Rescue Mission, the VA, and the Women's Shelter, Wheeler said. The Farm to Fork event, in which guests are asked to dress in casual business attire, will kick off with a social hour starting at 5:30 p.m. with sangria and hors d'oeuvres. For the 6 p.m. dinner, Wheeler is preparing a menu that includes smoked beef brisket, grilled herb chicken, assorted salads, green beans, potatoes, and desserts. Fresh lemonade and raspberry iced tea also will be served. Wheeler said the ingredients for the meal have been produced on our DACC farm or sourced from local farms. "It'll be all fresh-grown produce," she said. "We're going to use it for the sides, salads, and desserts." For months, Wheeler has been scouring thrift shops and estate sales for enough vintage dinnerware and serving poles to use for the family-style meal. Community members have helped donate some of the dinnerware. Donations are still being accepted at the Corporate and Community Education Office in the Bremer Center. "I think we're also going to have some entertainment from a student or staff member," she said. "Mostly it'll be a time for people to get together and get to know one another. If it rains, the dinner will be relocated to the Bremer Conference Center," Wheeler said. Doss, administrative assistant for the Executive Vice President's Office of Instruction, is in charge of taking reservations for the Farm to Fork event. "This is the first time we've done this, so we're just taking reservations at this time," Doss said. "They can call or email in the reservation and then pay at the door, or send a check made out to DACC with Farm to Fork in the memo so we know where it's going. I'm excited about the event. I hope it will go over really well," Doss said. "Dana is preparing a really nice meal, and there are a lot of good things happening at the farm." Our next story is entitled "Motorcyclist Hospitalized After Chase" by Mary Wyckoff. Danville. A motorcyclist was taken to Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana after he was involved in a high-speed chase on Friday. Zachary S. Blakeney, 33, of Mahomet, is being treated for injuries, according to Trooper Tracy Lillard with the Illinois State Police District 10. A spokesman at Carl said no information is being released on Blakeney's condition. The incident began when Danville police were called Friday to the Citgo gas station at 1207 North Bowman Avenue for a report of an intoxicated person to be removed from the business. Before officers arrived, the man left the business driving a motorcycle, according to a release from Captain Michael Hartshorn of the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department. Danville officers located the motorcycle lying on its side near the intersection of Bowman and Crestview Avenues. When officers approached the driver, Blakeney fled on the motorcycle. Danville officers pursued the suspect for a period of time and then discontinued the pursuit and continued to follow the driver using an unmarked vehicle. The driver continued to drive in a reckless manner, disobeying traffic control devices and driving at a high rate of speed, police said. Vermilion County Sheriff's deputies observed the vehicle near the intersection of Logan Avenue and Main Street in Danville, and the driver continued westbound on Route 150 at speeds approaching 100 miles per hour. Deputies began to pursue the motorcycle, and the driver entered Interstate 74 at the 210 milepost and began traveling westbound. Blakeney continued westbound at excessive rates of speed, driving in the grass median and passing other vehicles on the right-hand shoulder. Deputies followed the motorcycle until it approached the construction zone near the 193 milepost. As the motorcycle approached the construction zone, deputies backed off and the motorcycle continued at excessive speeds until striking the rear end of a vehicle that was in the left lane of I-74, police said. The crash tied up traffic on the interstate for 4 hours. The occupants of the vehicle hit by the motorcycle were uninjured, and Blakeney was airlifted to Carl. The crash was investigated by the Illinois State Police. And we also have a brief story entitled "Indiana Arrest." Dateline is Covington, Indiana. Several police agencies responded to a report of a disturbance at 5:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time Sunday at the Pilot truck stop at Interstate 74 and Indiana Route 63 near Covington. Vermilion County Police had received several 911 reports of an altercation in the parking lot of the truck stop, according to Vermilion County Sheriff Mike Phelps. One report stated shots had been fired. Because of that, officers from multiple agencies responded, including Vermilion, Warren, and Fountain County Sheriff's Departments, Indiana Conservation Office, Indiana State Police from the Lafayette Post, and Covington City Police. However, upon investigation, police determined no weapons were involved and no shots had been fired. The altercation that had occurred in the parking lot stemmed from a disagreement on driving behaviors during a trip with friends and family. The disagreement boiled over in the parking lot, where physical contact was made, police said. A Shelburne, Indiana man was transported to the Vermilion County Jail on a charge of battery. And now we turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. Max Enos. Max Enos, 90, of Boynton Beach, Florida, died July 7th, 2018. He was preceded in death by his wife, Marjorie, and son, Mark. James Brewer, Sr. James Brewer, Sr., 51, of Danville, Illinois, died Saturday, July 28, 2018, at his daughter's home. Per Jim's wishes, there will be no visitation or funeral. He wanted his body donated to research and education. A small memorial will be held at an undisclosed date for his family and friends. Phyllis Jean Green. Phyllis Green, 86, of Sevierville, Tennessee, formerly of Morristown, Tennessee, and Danville, Illinois, passed away Monday, July 30, 2018, at Pigeon Forge Health and Rehab. Entombment services will be at 12 p.m. Thursday, August 2nd, in Hamblin Memory Gardens, with Tommy Bellamy officiating. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to be made to the charity of your choice. Arrangements by Stubblefield Funeral Home, Morristown, Tennessee. Gregory Stephen Engelman. Gregory Partner Stephen Engelman, 67, of Oakwood, Illinois, passed away at 9:50 a.m. Friday, July 27, 2018, at his home. Per his wishes, his ashes will be spread by his grandchildren at his favorite fishing spot in Pennsylvania, where they fished together. Memorial services held by family at a later date. Robison Chapel, Catlin, Illinois, is handling the arrangements. And now we have a story from the Associated Press entitled, Study, Medicare for All, Projected to Cost $32.6 Trillion, by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar. Washington. Senator Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan would boost government health spending by $32.6 trillion over 10 years, requiring historic tax hikes, says a study released Monday by a university-based Libertarian Policy Center. That's trillion with a T. The latest plan from the Vermont Independent would deliver significant savings on administration and drug costs, but increased demand for care would drive up spending, according to the analysis by the Mercatus Center at George Mason University in Virginia. Doubling federal individual and corporate income tax receipts would not cover the full cost, the study said. Sanders' plan builds on Medicare, the popular insurance program for seniors. All U.S. residents would be covered with no co-pays and deductibles for medical services. The insurance industry would be relegated to a minor role. Enacting something like Medicare for All would be a transformative change in the size of the federal government, said Charles Blayhouse, the study's author. Blayhouse was a senior economic advisor to former President George W. Bush and a public trustee of Social Security and Medicare during the Obama administration. Responding to the study, Sanders took aim at the Mercatus Center, which receives funding from the conservative Koch brothers. Koch Industries CEO Charles Koch is on the center's board. If every major country on Earth can guarantee health care to all and achieve better health care outcomes while spending substantially less per capita than we do, it is absurd for anyone to suggest that the United States cannot do the same, Sanders said in a statement. This grossly misleading and biased report is the Koch brothers' response to the growing support in our country for a Medicare for All program. Sanders' office has not done a cost analysis, a spokesman said. His 2016 presidential campaign website cites an estimated price tag of $1.38 trillion a year for an earlier version of the plan, but other studies have projected much higher costs. Sanders' staff found an error in an initial version of the Mercatus report, which counted a long-term care program that was in the 2016 proposal, but not the current one. Blayhouse corrected it, reducing his estimate by about $3 trillion over 10 years. Blayhouse says the report is his own work, not the Koch brothers. Also called single payer over the years, Medicare for All reflects a longtime wish among liberals for a government-run system that covers all Americans. With Republicans in charge of Congress and the White House, it has little chance. But Sanders' idea has broad rank-and-file support among Democrats, and polls show it also appeals to many independents. Looking ahead to the 2020 election, Democrats are debating whether single-payer should be a litmus test for national candidates. The Mercatus analysis estimated the 10-year cost of Medicare for All from 2022 to 2031 after an initial phase-in. Its findings are similar to those of several independent studies of Sanders' 2016 plan. Those studies found increases in federal spending over 10 years that ranged from $24.7 trillion to $34.7 trillion. Kenneth Thorpe, a health policy professor at Emory University in Atlanta, authored one of the earlier studies and says the Mercatus analysis reinforces them. It's showing that if you are going to go in this direction, it's going to cost the federal government $2.5 trillion to $3 trillion a year in terms of spending, said Thorpe. Even though people don't pay premiums, the tax increases are going to be enormous. And turning now to the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, we have some additional brief obituaries to add. Bonnie Peterson. Bonnie Peterson, 87, of Kansas, Illinois, died at 2:19 p.m. Friday, July 27, 2018, at Carle Foundation Hospital. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Ileana Cremation Society, P.O. Box 1906, Danville. Kenneth Pruitt. Kenneth Pruitt, 59, of Danville, died at 12:53 p.m. Thursday, July 26, 2018, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Dennis Seals. Dennis Wade Paw Seals, 86, of Hupston, died at 11:15 p.m. Friday, July 27, 2018, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton. Funeral services for the Army veteran will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. Pastor Kevin Purdy will officiate. Burial will be in Rossville Cemetery in Rossville. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. And in other local news from the News Gazette, we have a story entitled GOP Nominates First-Termer for Board Chairman by Tracy Crane for the News Gazette. Danville, a first-term Vermilion County board member from Hoopston, was chosen Monday night by Republicans to succeed Mike Marin as board chairman. Larry Bawn, a former one-term Hoopston City Council member and current morning radio show DJ at WHPO in Hoopston, was nominated by the Republican County Board Caucus in a unanimous voice vote. No one else was nominated. I appreciate everybody's support and look forward to working with everybody, Bawn said just after the vote. With the party holding a 17-10 majority on the county board, the Republicans' nomination of Bawn means he will likely be the next chairman, a full-time position that comes with an annual salary of $68,960. Bawn was first elected to the county board in District 1 in 2014. He is running unopposed for a second term in the November 6th election. The full county board is expected to vote on Bawn's nomination for the chairmanship at its September monthly meeting. Democrats can also nominate a board member for the chairmanship at that time. In anticipation of full county board approval, Bawn will be logging hours at the Vermilion County Administration Building, working alongside Marin to learn as much as he can about running the county before Marin steps away. I think the chairman's done a great job, and I want to get as much from him as I can, said Bawn, adding that he plans to be at the county board office today, gleaning all he can from Marin, the GOP candidate in the 104th district in November's election, facing Democrat Cindy Cunningham. Marin will resign as county board chairman on September 7th to be sworn in to the seat he's seeking. State Representative Chad Hayes, a Republican from Catlin, decided not to run again and announced on June 22nd that he would leave office before the end of his term in January to become executive director of Cross Point Human Services in Danville. Less than 2 weeks ago, Republican Party leaders in Vermilion and Champaign chose Marin to fill out the remainder of Hayes' term. Hayes will resign his seat September 7th, just before Marin is sworn in to replace him. Marin spoke briefly at the beginning of Monday night's caucus, then left to let Republican board members choose their nominee. It's been a pleasure being on the county board the last 7 years, he said. Bawn said the biggest issues he will deal with, if approved as board chairman in September, are the county's budget process and the decommissioning of two vacant buildings, the former courthouse annex in downtown Danville and the former Vermilion County Emergency Management Agency building on Georgetown Road. And finally, in community briefs from the Commercial News, we have a notice for classmates to meet. Members of Danville High School's class of 1953 will meet for their 65th reunion at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time Friday for lunch at the Beef House near Covington, Indiana. For reservations, call Norma Root Birch at 217-442-1728. This is Greg, and I've enjoyed reading the Vermilion County News for you for today, Tuesday, July 31st, 2018, and I hope to read for you again soon. Have a great day.